So, I'll do the reading today. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll start with text number 12 and read through 24. Kalakantapuru told me that you're familiar with the context here of Bhishma Dev and his speaking. So we'll deal mainly today with just the philosophical matters that are brought up in these verses. Text number 12. Bhishma Dev said, "Oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffer for being the sons of religion personified. You do not deserve to maintain, you did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations, yet you were protected by the Brahmanas, God, and religion. As far as my daughter-in-law Kunti is concerned, upon the great general Pandu's death, she became a widow with many children, and therefore she suffered greatly. And then, and when you were grown up, she suffered a great deal also because of your actions. In my opinion, this is all due to inevitable time, under whose control everyone in every planet is carried, just as the clouds are carried by the wind. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion, Bhima, the great fighter with a club, the great bowman Arjuna with his mighty weapon Gandiva, and above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. O best among the descendants of Bharata Yudhisthira, I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now the appointed administrative head, and, my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. This Sri Krishna is no other than the inconceivable original personality of Godhead. He is the first Narayana, the supreme enjoyer. But he is moving amongst the descendants of King Vrishni like one of us, and he is bewildering us by his self-created energy. O King, Lord Shiva, Narada, the sage amongst the demigods, and Kapila, the incarnation of Godhead, all know very confidentially about his glories through direct contact. O King, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your very dear friend, well-wisher, controller, messenger, benefactor, etc., is that very personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Being the absolute personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart, he is equally kind to everyone, and he is free from the false ego of differentiation. Therefore, whatever he does is free from material inebriety. He is equibalanced. Yet, despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I am ending my life, and I am his unflinching servitor. The personality of Godhead who appears in the mind of the devotee by attentive devotion and meditation, and by chanting of the holy name, releases the devotee from the bondage of fruitive activities at the time of his quitting the material body. May my Lord, who is four-handed and whose beautifully decorated lotus face with eyes as red as the rising sun is smiling, kindly await me at the moment when I quit this material body. All right, so this is a statement of Bhishma Dev on the sufferings that were endured by the Pandavas. And suffering is a subject that is certainly bewildering, and I think that many people actually give up their faith in God because of suffering. I just got an email yesterday from a devotee who was expressing some doubts that he had concerning descriptions of suffering that are in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Certainly, these questions arise in the mind of devotees, but as I said, in general society, you'll find many people that just, you know, when they see the sufferings in the world, they can't reconcile it with the presence of God. And rather than become faithful in God, they give up their belief altogether. So how do devotees respond to suffering? And the question that's asked, at least on the curriculum that Kalakanda gave me, is do devotees suffer? So we're going to talk about that by looking at three of the purports that are in this section of the verses we read and try to get some understanding of this question about why devotees suffer. So text number 16, purport, is the first one. And maybe I'll get a little help on the reading on this.
The bewilderment of Maharaj Yudhisthira over his past sinful acts and the resultant sufferings is completely negated by the great authority Bhishma, one of the 12 authorized persons. Bhishma wanted to impress upon Maharaj Yudhisthira that since time immemorial, no one, including such demigods as Shiva and Brahma, could ascertain the real plan of the Lord. So what can we understand about it? It is useless also to inquire about it. Even the exhaustive philosophical inquiries of sages cannot ascertain the plan of the Lord. The best policy is simply to abide by the orders of the Lord without argument. The sufferings of the Pandavas were never due to their past deeds. The Lord had to execute the plan of establishing the kingdom of virtue, and therefore his own devotees suffered temporarily in order to establish the conquest of virtue. Bhishma Dev was certainly satisfied by seeing the triumph of virtue, and he was glad to see King Yudhisthira on the throne, although he himself fought against him. Even a great fighter like Bhishma could not win the battle of Kurukshetra because the Lord wanted to show that vice cannot conquer virtue, regardless of who tries to execute it. Bhishma Dev was a great devotee of the Lord, but he chose to fight against the Pandavas by the will of the Lord because the Lord wanted to show that a fighter like Bhishma cannot win on the wrong side.
So we'll discuss each of the purports separately, because each of these three purports, 16 we just read, 17, which we'll read in a few minutes, and 19, actually give three ways to understand this question of why or how do devotees suffer. Three ways of approaching and understanding of that. So the first reason that's given in this purport may not really satisfy a lot of those people in the world that give up their faith in God in the face of suffering. Because essentially, Prabhupada's explaining here that you just have to accept it. Let me just read his words exactly here. The best policy is simply to abide by the orders of the Lord without argument. So how does that strike you as a reason for believing in God? Just accept it. There's suffering and just accept it. It's a pretty demanding standard, you know. Just accept what you can't understand, and that's all you can do in the face of questions like suffering. But actually, for the devotee, this is actually a reason to believe rather than not believe in God. The fact that you just have to accept it. And there are several factors to this, which I'll try to explain. First is the statement by Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī. He says that in order to understand the Supreme Lord, I'll just hold it actually. In order to understand the Supreme Lord, you have to accept the inconceivability of the Supreme Lord. You have to accept the inconceivability to be able to understand. In other words, admitting that, no, I can't understand. I can't understand the plan of the Lord. I can't understand anything about Him. And actually, we're taught systematically as we progress in our Krishna consciousness how to understand this position in relation to the Supreme Lord. And the first symptom is a symptom of knowledge that's given in Bhagavad Gita, and that is humility. The first symptom of knowledge is humility. And if we apply this to trying to understand the Lord, it means that we can't conquer the Lord with our knowledge. When we gain knowledge of something, we tend to think that, well, now, you know, I've conquered that and I can use that, rather than having to be subordinate to it. That's the point. Our knowledge and our endeavors in knowledge often involve trying to get out of the position of being subordinate to a situation, subordinate to nature, to control nature, in ways that we really can't. And so, for a devotee, the first step in knowledge is humility. Understanding that I'm not the controller, I'm not the knower, and that... How is he doing out there? Yeah, okay. Oh, okay. Okay, great. Wow. But it just goes to show, as I'm saying here, that we aren't always in control in ways in which that we would like to think we are. And so therefore, especially when suffering comes up, my own experience of that as my children were growing up is whenever they would become sick, I'd get very frustrated because I couldn't do something, you know, to like make them... Well, it was, of course, obviously there was care there, but the fact that disease had struck was outside of my control. And so therefore I became very frustrated in dealing with the situation. Well, you also have got your foot in a boot here also. My goodness, there's a lot going on this week. Maybe after the kirtan or something like that. Well. Okay, I hope you're feeling better. Anyway, yeah, there was this frustration in trying to understand that I'm not the controller. And that's not going to help us in approaching an understanding of God, particularly when there are subjects very bewildering like suffering. So we have to admit that God is beyond our conception. We can't bring him under our control by mental processes, by yogic processes. And therefore, we are subordinate to him. And this humility also leads us to how we do understand the Supreme Lord, how we can understand him, and that is by revelation. So often you hear in discussion of in religious circles about revelation, God reveals himself. And when he does, that is how we understand him. We don't understand him otherwise. We can't understand him otherwise. And so humility and revelation are the ways in which we can understand suffering as well. Why devotees go through suffering, even why non-devotees go through suffering, can be understood by taking a humble position, accepting the Supreme Lord, as Prabhupada says here in the purport, abiding by his orders without argument. By doing that, we can actually attract the mercy of the Lord, and then he'll reveal his nature to us. And so, although initially this statement seems a little surprising, that you just have to grin and bear it, just accept what you can't understand, if we look at it in these terms, we can actually get some encouragement about how to understand devotee suffering around and suffering in general in this world. Yes. Right. Okay, very good. Comment Vaishnava is saying that in initial stages of devotional service, faith may be necessary to abide by to understand the Lord and actions that he takes. But later, as one develops knowledge and revelation, then that maintains devotion. Is that correct? Yeah, I think that's certainly true. And we see this in the example in Srimad Bhagavatam of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, we know that at the beginning of the creation of the universe, he sort of became consciously aware that he was sitting on this lotus flower and nobody else was around and it was dark around. And so you all right, Prabhu? I don't know if I could say the same for myself. I went through that experience. And you're going to sit back down there? You're really brave. Well, hopefully that won't come. Yes, we're just talking about suffering. That's the subject matter, why devotees suffer. So it's hard to understand. I mean, comes to the temple, right? You want to see the Lord, hear some transcendental knowledge? Personally, he. Oh, wow. Okay, well. Yeah, well, I mean, that's a question about suffering. Is that, I mean, that's an assumption you're making that, you know, they kind of attacked him. They knew something was going on. Maybe. We don't know. We don't know all the facts because that's our position. We're subordinate to the Lord. But we're saying how by revelation, by taking a humble attitude by revelation, we can know the plan of the Lord. And the example of Brahma. Born on a lotus flower, no one around, no one to tell anything. So what did he have to do first? He had to do tapasya. He got the message, do tapasya, and then you'll be able to understand. So he did that. He did tapasya. And then he was able to understand everything. Actually, the Lord came and revealed to him the spiritual world, everything. So That's a necessary requirement for understanding suffering, that we put ourselves in the situation of dependence on the Lord, subordination to the Lord. And that way, the statements like this that we just have to accept without argument, they make a little bit more sense, you know, to us, and they actually are faith-giving rather than destroying our faith. So does anybody have any questions about that first way to understand suffering, whether devotees suffer? Okay. Well, because this verse, you know, it was talking about the Pandavas, trying to understand the Pandavas, and so I think that's a question that is most bewildering in society. You know, that book that we often refer to, Why Do Good Things Happen to Bad Things Happen to Good People? And so when people see, you know, religious people or good people in society suffering, that bewilders them more than when they see, you know, criminal elements or other types of people suffering. They can understand that they're suffering more than so when we see the Pandavas suffering, that's the bewilderment that Bhishma's talking about here. They were such great devotees. How is it they were suffering? Were they suffering? Yes, they were suffering. I think that I heard a discussion recently about this, and the question was there about whether devotees are actually suffering, or whether it's kind of like a, you know, like a, they're playing the role or something in there. And we're going to talk a little about that when we get into the next understandings of suffering here. But the conclusion of that discussion was is that it's not, if we knew it was kind of just like play and they weren't really suffering, would we really take the lesson that's being taught? And that sort of leads us into the next purport here, which is 17, which talks about the next question, about the next understanding of how to approach this idea of devotee suffering. I'll just read the purport here. The popular saying is that a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Do you understand how that means? Maybe those of you not from the Indian context might understand. Generally in a sort of a Hindu, maybe just all Indian marriages, the daughter-in-law comes and lives with the family. When the son gets married, his wife comes and lives with the family. Now, of course, the family has their way of doing things. So the new daughter-in-law has to know how to do those things to fit into the family. And so rather than teach and chastise the new daughter-in-law in the house, the mother of the house will teach her own daughter that way, you know, chastise her own daughter. And by observing the new wife, she can understand how things are done. Okay? So that's the popular saying, that the housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Similarly, the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotee. The devotee does not have to learn anything new from the Lord, because the Lord teaches the sincere devotee always from within. Whenever, therefore, a show is made to teach the devotee, as in the case of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, it is for teaching the less intelligent men. A devotee's duty, therefore, is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. The Pandavas were advised by Bhishma to accept the responsibility of administration without hesitation. The poor subjects were without protection due to the battle of Kurukshetra, and they were awaiting the assumption of power by Maharaj Yudhisthira. A pure devotee of the Lord accepts tribulations as favors from the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two. So this gets to the point that Gopal was making in the next step in understanding why devotees suffer. Devotees suffer because the Lord has an objective to achieve. And how is he going to do it? How is he going to achieve his objective? He's going to do it by using those trusted servitors of his who are willing to accept suffering as a service to the Lord. So in answer to your question, Gopal, about do devotees actually suffer, I would say yes, devotees actually suffer. They do. They go through difficult situations. I mean, have any of you been through difficult situations? I think Baladev has been through one just right in front of our eyes. So we've been through difficult situations, but why? Why would we do that? Why would we do that? Why would someone join the Hare Krishna movement and follow the restrictions that are there, give up so many things that are there in ordinary life? Why would someone do that? Gopal? Do we have the mic that works?
It says, in the Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita in the purport that what was the question?
Why would a devotee accept a position that he knew was going to result in suffering? Okay, that's all right. Maybe you think of it. Yes?
There's a difference between like an outer show of happiness and an inward sense of being at peace with your relationship with God. So it's not really a matter of, am I happy, you know, am I laughing and smiling all the time, but rather, is Krishna happy? Mm-hmm. And am I at peace with the way I'm behaving in accordance with the way he says which we should behave?
Even to the extent that that may result in some personal suffering that you have. Okay, so that's very good. There's a difference between sort of the internal satisfaction we get from serving Krishna, and even though that may be in a situation where there's external suffering.
Like a lot of times you, more materialistic people, you see them so happy, but internally they're not at peace with maybe what they're doing to make themselves happy or something. Just as
okay. Gopal, you
know? Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita that faith means by practicing devotional service, everything desirable is attained. So it's in our best interest to do these things.
Okay. Even though there's suffering involved.
Right.
Okay, these are all service attitudes that you're expressing. Very good. Any other service attitudes? Is that Stephanie?
This just made me think of like Radhanath Maharaj and Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Well, that they suffered so much, especially Bhakti Tirtha Swami through his suffering. But I remember somebody told me that he said that he was so grateful for his disease because he understood the position of other people. So by like people that had to go through cancer and that kind of stuff, so he was so grateful that he could understand the sufferings of others. So these like great teachers, like great people, you know, we can learn from them. You know that we can, even through like difficulties, physical difficulties, it still brings about like huge spiritual realizations. In that we shouldn't give up our devotional service by just like simple, well, not necessarily simple in this case, it was really a big deal, but by material problems, you know, that our devotion should continue. So.
Okay, good. Yes. Okay, very good. Let's come down the line.
Well, two things. One is that no matter who we're serving or what we're doing, we're going to suffer. And I think that's sometimes difficult to remember for me, particularly like when I'm suffering in spiritual life, and then I think, oh, I wasn't suffering so much before. You know, I just need a break for a minute from all the purification. But I was suffering so much before. It's just that I wasn't actually I was burning karma, I guess, but I was also accruing karma. So I wasn't gaining anything. But now I know, and this goes into the second point, like by the mercy of the spiritual master and by being able to read Krishna's words, that this is the best for me, that this is going to lead me to becoming a pure servant. And so I'm gaining everything by it. I'm not losing anything. Suffering in spiritual life, and then it actually becomes something
that
can be great.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to say that suffering brings you closer to the Lord. During suffering, we think about Lord more, and we realize this material world is not for us. We have to go back to God. So it inspires us to go back to God, and this is not a good place to live. And during suffering, the Maya stays away. You cannot see the Maya.
Okay. Actually, these are all very good points, and I think that I like this last point because it's the lesson that's learned. The Lord, in this purport, Prabhupada's explaining how the Lord's devotees accept the position of being in suffering so that others can get a lesson. And what is that lesson that others get? You know, that they should suffer? No, it's that they should take shelter of the Lord. That they should pray to the Lord when something happens. You know, that's an important lesson to take. That, oh, I should go and take shelter of Krishna. I had an experience myself just this week of going through a very grueling experience where I had to sit for 6 hours while... No bell? I had to sit for 6 hours while this lawyer grilled me with questions, you know, peppered me with questions, one after another. And after that, I was not only physically exhausted, mentally exhausted, and in quite a deal of anxiety. And so I was thinking, what can I do in this situation? What do I do? What I concluded was, let me go and try to offer my obeisances to Prabhupada. Just go and see Prabhupada, you know, on my altar. Just and go see darshan of the deities. In other words, just try to take shelter somewhere. You know, what are you going to do? Your mind's reeling this way, that way. You don't know what to do. But when you're in that kind of a suffering position, the devotee feels that, not that I'm a devotee, but... A devotee would feel that, let me go and have darshan, let me go and see the Lord, let me offer my obeisances, some way to take shelter. And that's the real lesson to learn from suffering, the lesson that the Lord is teaching his devotees, teaching through his devotees, that when my devotees suffer, their faith in me becomes stronger. They express their faith in me. They exercise their faith in me. And by doing that, they're showing others that that's what they should do too. That's what everyone should do. Prabhupada actually said good things about this society when there was a couple things that happened. One time, the astronauts were going and there was some fire or something like that. And there was a great concern about what would happen to the astronauts. And the nation, you know, all took to prayer. You know, I think the leaders, the president or whatever, was said we should all like pray for the safe return of these astronauts. And so they took shelter of prayer. They took shelter of God in circumstances like this. That's good. But where are they going to get the example like that? Who's going to teach them that example? Well, I guess they learned it from Christ or whatever. But there are many examples we find in our scriptures and all scriptures of the world. Devotees of the Lord, when they're in a crisis, they take shelter. And so that's what's one of the ways we can understand devotee suffering. And again, I think devotees do suffer. I mean, it is real. But because there's something inside, like we had the comments so that all of you hear, because there's something inside, a gain that can be perceived by the devotee, in a sense, they're not suffering, are they? They're not suffering. I mean, if you take trouble for your loved ones, is that really, are you really suffering? You know, say you're raising a child or something like that. So much difficulty is there. Is it really suffering? Do you experience it as suffering? No. A new mother is staying up all night, can't sleep for weeks after the birth of a child. But does she, like, you know, complain or condemn, you know, the child or the situation? No, she, because there's something more being gained, an internal strength being gained. So that's the second reason or a way we can approach understanding of devotees. Now, the third way, I must admit, when I read this purport, I was very surprised. I didn't remember the purport, nor what it said, but it says some pretty amazing things about why a devotee suffers. And I'm not going to read the whole purport, but let me summarize the beginning. Prabhupada talks in the beginning about the Mahajans, and he talks about, starts talking about Anubhava, or the glory of the Lord. Anubhava meaning a feeling or expression or a loving expression in relationship to the Lord. And he talks about how that appears in symptoms of perspiring, trembling, weeping, bodily eruptions, etc. So he's talking about ecstatic symptoms of love of Godhead. And then he goes on to say that the sufferings that devotees experience are just like those other symptoms of ecstatic love of Godhead. Weeping, bodily eruptions. You can imagine if someone was just in ecstasy, you know, and they did the rolling on the floor, and it would, you know, everyone would be like, wow, this person's like experiencing love of God. But Prabhupada here is saying that, and I'll just read what his words, but he's saying the sufferings we see devotees go through are just like those same symptoms, transcendental symptoms of ecstatic love of God. That's another reason why devotees suffer. He says here that tribulations imposed upon the devotees by the Lord constitute another exchange of transcendental bhava between the Lord and the devotees. The Lord says, I put my devotees into difficulties, and thus my devotees become more purified in exchanging transcendental bhava with me. Placing the devotee in material troubles necessitates delivering him from the illusory material relations. The material relations are based on reciprocation of material enjoyment, which depend mainly on material resources. Therefore, when material resources are withdrawn by the Lord, and a devotee is 100% attracted toward the transcendental loving service of the Lord, thus the Lord snatches the fallen soul from the mire of material existence. Tribulations offered by the Lord to his devotees are different from tribulations resulting from vicious action. All these glories of the Lord are especially known to the great Mahajans like Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Kapila, Kumara, and Bhishma, as mentioned above, and one has to grasp it by their grace. Now, this is a pretty amazing statement that sufferings you see the devotees go for. And this is specifically answering the question, do devotees suffer? When we see devotees going through sufferings, it may be Krishna engaging in transcendental loving relationships with them, just like he engages in transcendental loving relationships with the gopis or the cowherd boys or anybody else. I mean, that's a pretty amazing concept, if you ask me, that these kind of troubles are actually transcendental ecstasies. I don't know that I have that much to say about it because it's sort of beyond my understanding. I mean, I'm more back on the accepting without question level. Than the fact that, you know, can do this. But there are a couple of things that we can understand about this. And one is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in relation to his devotees is all good. Whether it appears to be something that he's giving you misery, or whether it appears that he's giving you love, Because he's absolute, one of the purports here said before, since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two. So because the Lord is absolute, whether he loves you by giving you suffering, or whether he loves you by engaging in loving exchanges with you, both are the same. There's not any mundane difference between them. So, in that way, the Lord is all good in his relationship with us. And the devotee, in reciprocation, is unconditional in his love for the Supreme Lord. Yes. Exactly. That's why I brought the songbook here, to read that. Yeah, it says, I'll read it exactly. I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain so even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. And that's the point. A devotee, even if he's put in suffering, he unconditionally loves the Supreme Lord. And so it doesn't matter to him whether he's suffering or not. And I think this kind of gets back to what Olivia was saying in her first comment, you know, that whether one is suffering or enjoying is not the point. Loving Krishna is the point. And so a devotee comes to this level of unconditional love, and therefore the Lord can send them to the world and into a suffering condition and teach others through placing him in difficulty. And the devotee has no objection to that whatsoever due to his unconditional willingness to love the Lord. Even if the Lord wants to act in the role of a savior, that's also a sort of a mood that is sometimes imitated in this material world, that I'm the savior. I'm the knight in shining armor that's going to come and rescue the situation. Where does that feeling, that idea come from? It comes from the Supreme Lord. So if he has to create this material world and have living entities suffer so that he can enjoy the rasa of coming and being the savior, then for the unconditional devotees of the Lord, they have no problem with that whatsoever. But I think it's a little difficult for us to grasp at our stage in devotional service that he's free to do anything and everything and we'll love him unconditionally. But that's ultimately the stage we have to come to if we're going to understand this question of why devotees suffer. This degree of unconditional love, it has to be there. Does anybody have any questions about that? Yes, sir?
I'm just wondering, because I've heard that Krishna gives us as much as we can handle. It's kind of like always would give us, stretch us to that point. And then when you see devotees living based on the suffering, kind of, so how can we understand that?
That's a good point, because I think that we do have to understand, in trying to understand this whole subject, we have to understand how the Lord reacts with us individually. And so Prabhupada has instructed us that, yes, Krishna won't give you more than you can handle. Just like in an examination, you get examined on what you should know, what your capability is. They don't give calculus in the first grade, because they don't have the capability. So that is how the Lord deals with us individually. But he also is interested in us making advancement, coming forward. So he'll give us a little bit more, you know, give us a little bit more, and require us to continue to grow, to continue to develop. When we give up that endeavor, then we make the choice of falling away. As you said, people go away. what's going to prevent us from making the choice to go away? Well, some kind of understanding, these different types of understanding we're trying to get here today about why devotees suffer. Because many devotees leave the Krishna consciousness movement based on the sufferings or the different austerities that they had to experience. Even though they had a relationship with Krishna to the degree with that were, that was attracted to them, there were other things that were sufferings, we could categorize them as sufferings, which made them want to go away. So at some point they had to choose, am I going to continue to endure these difficulties or am I going to go away? And so in that stage, then they stop passing the test that Krishna gives us. So if we see like that, the sufferings that we experience are under the control of Krishna. Not that Krishna is not involved in my life. He's involved in my life. He's trying to help me. And I have different sufferings. Let me continue to surrender it to him and resolve them through that way. Then we'll continue passing tests. But when we give up that attitude, that devotional attitude, then things start to look bigger than they actually are, the sufferings. Because as Amrita Kelly was saying, forgot what she was saying, but she said something along that line about, anyway, it slipped my mind today. I got it from Gopal. Well, remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness comes from Krishna, so so that's good. Any other comments anyone has?
I have a question, Prabhu.
Yeah.
So the unconditional love, you know, philosophically we understand, theoretically we understand that, you know, this is how it needs to be. But how does a person live his life and experience that day to day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how do we express that and how do we understand that, you know, in our day-to-day relationship with other people in this world?
Well, our philosophy is not just philosophy, it's gyan and vigyan. So yes, there has to be that component that you're talking about. We can know these things, but then how do we practically implement them? Well, I think that one way in which we can implement them is to maintain a humble attitude and approach to life. I think that that's something that's always there. And the minute we have pride start entering our heart and our interactions with others or in dealing with certain situations, then we really are sort of like going out on our own, you know. So maintaining a humble attitude and trying our best to do the devotional right thing. I mean, I think that's what we have to do in every circumstance in life, not just in service in the temple, but in every circumstance in life. If we want Krishna's mercy, Krishna's involvement in our life, then we have to open ourselves up to that in every sphere of our life and not sort of designate, well, this is for Krishna and this is for Maya. When we do that, then to that degree, it becomes sort of theoretical for us, you know. Because we live kind of a theoretical lifestyle in the temple, right? We're studying and we're leading. But then when we're tested by the real world, you know, pressures, if we just give up Krishna consciousness altogether, then what is the use of the theoretical knowledge that we have living in the temple? So I think approaching it like that. Does that?
Yeah, definitely. One more question regarding the same point. You mentioned about pride. Then you said that pride enters then our heart, and then we, you know, we start becoming non-humble. Mm-hmm. So can pride be defined as, you know, when a person thinks of himself different from Krishna? Because, you know, from my standpoint, you know, humility comes when I see, okay, this person did something or other that, you know, I wasn't expecting or I didn't like them. You know, I would have wished that they didn't do it. But you think, oh, this is a mercy of Krishna. This is, you know, this is Krishna's will. Maybe he's trying to teach me a lesson. Then I give up the feeling of envy or you know, anger towards the other person. This is between me and Krishna, and if this is what he desires, then I accept it.
All right.
So, but on the other side, when I do not think of it that way, you know, then I have this feeling inside me, and I'm going to get you. You just wait your turn now.
Right.
So yeah, can pride be defined as, you know, when a person thinks of himself different, or, you know, I'm trying to organize my thoughts here. When you see something happening to yourself, you know, either in a personal life or professional life or whatever, and you see that as a different from Krishna's will, can that be defined as a pride?
Yes, I think that that's pride. I think that's a good definition of pride. It's very good. Yeah, we don't ever want to be in a situation where we're on our own. We're actually connected with a person that can resolve all of our problems and resolve all situations and can give us complete shelter and is ready to give us complete shelter. A lot of times we might think, well, I don't want to bother God. I don't want to bother, you know, devotees. But they're always ready to give shelter. That's why we chant that verse, Vanchikalpatrubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanam pavanabhyo vaishnavibhyo namaha. The devotees, the Lord, they're always ready to give shelter to us. And we should see things like that in our life. And then we'll never start seeing this separateness which results in pride, as you say. Yes. Anything else anyone has? Well, we have all our good wishes for Baladev Prabhu, you know. And hope you can get that out of your mind, because that's where the problem might linger more than physically. You know? Thank you, Hare Krishna.